Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show at KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording in our studio at the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. Today, we open with some global and local reactions to the tragic attack in a Jerusalem synagogue. And then on our Capitol Report, we'll have news about the Keystone Pipeline vote in Congress and the possible immigration reforms that President Obama is expected to propose. We'll have reactions from some local leaders to the president's announcement of sending 1,500 troops to Iraq. Next, we'll have local news, including a controversial gun rights ruling, the sentencing of an SDG&E driver for a fatal hit and run, a water recycling measure approved in San Diego, and a car crash that injured several people in a food line in El Cajon this week. Our newsmaker today is Pastor Harold Brown with the East County Transitional Living Center, who was recently honored as Person of the Year by the Chaldean American Association. We'll be speaking with him about his efforts to help the homeless and other people in need. So stay tuned for these stories and more on today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. World reactions are pouring in after two Palestinians armed with guns and butcher knives opened an attack inside a synagogue in Jerusalem early Tuesday morning, killing four rabbis and a police officer. Three of those murdered rabbis were American-Israeli citizens. The Jewish Federation of San Diego has issued a statement which reads, "We are shocked and appalled by the horrific attack on innocent worshipers. As a community, we send our condolences to the families of the victims and wish a speedy recovery to the injured." The San Diego group added, "We call on the entire global community to join us in condemning this attack in the strongest possible terms, immediately and unconditionally." President Barack Obama also condemned the violence. "There is and can be no justification for such attacks against innocent civilians," he said. "The thoughts and prayers of the American people are with the victims and families of all those who were killed and injured in this horrific attack and in other recent violence." Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas denounced the attack, but he also called for an end to what he called Israeli provocations. Hamas, however, praised the killers as, quote, heroes, and posted on Facebook that the synagogue slaughter was retaliation for a slain Palestinian bus driver. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has pledged that Israel will respond harshly to the attacks on worshipers in the synagogue. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry urged the Palestinian leadership to take serious steps to restrain incitement of violence and to, quote, exhibit the kind of leadership that is necessary to put this region on a different path. Foreign leaders who joined in denouncing the attacks include French President François Hollande, Canadian Foreign Minister John Baird, and German Foreign Minister Frank-Walter Steinmeier. Arab leader Khalid bin Ahmad al-Khalifa, Bahrain's foreign minister, also stated, "The murder of Jews praying in a synagogue is a crime." The Republican Jewish Coalition's David Flaum offered prayers for peace and healing along with rare cross-party praise for Secretary of State Kerry. Flaum said Kerry was right to place a heavy measure of responsibility for this horror on a Palestinian leadership that has tacitly and explicitly encouraged terrorist violence. He added, "We urge members of the Obama administration to adhere to this standard of moral clarity in all their statements and actions during these difficult days ahead." Americans for Peace called on both Israelis and Palestinian leaders to put an end to inflammatory actions and rhetoric that would further intensify the bloodshed, fight terrorism, and to engage in diplomatic relations to settle the conflict in the region. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
This is Ed Barreno with the Capitol Report. By a single vote, the Senate blocked passage Tuesday of a measure that would have authorized building the controversial Keystone XL pipeline. The bill had previously passed the House of Representatives, but with Republicans taking control of the Senate in January, Senate Majority Leader-elect Mitch McConnell has vowed to bring the matter up again soon after the new Congress convenes. Even if passed, however, the measure could face a veto by President Barack Obama. California Democratic Senator Barbara Boxer opposed the XL pipeline, calling it the extra-lethal pipeline. She cited health risks from chemicals that can cause lung damage as well as serious environmental concerns. The facts are the facts are the facts, she said. If you're not a scientist, then be humble and listen to the peer-reviewed scientists, unquote. TransCanada's XL pipeline would transport tar sands oil extracted from Canada to the Gulf Coast for shipping. The process of extracting tar sands pumps greenhouse gases into the environment, which scientists warn could be catastrophic for climate change. There are also risks of pipeline leaks or spills through America's heartland. According to the New York Times, there are two ways producers get the thick tar-like oil sands out of the ground, both damaging to the environment. In one method, large amounts of water and natural gas are used to pump steam into the sands to extract the oil, which creates toxic runoff. Alternatively, energy companies strip mine the sands and then heat them to release the oil, which has already destroyed vast tracts of Canadian forests. The pipeline has drawn strong opposition from First Nations Indigenous tribes in Canada, which have denounced the despoiling of their lands and waterways by tar sands mining. The U.S. State Department conducted an environmental review, which found that oil sands petroleum production creates about 17% more carbon pollution than producing conventional oil. Supporters in Congress have touted the measure as a major job creator that would boost the U.S. economy. But a fact check by CNN found that the project would create only 35 permanent jobs and less than 4,000 temporary construction jobs. Backers also point out that approval would strengthen relations with Canada and that if not approved, the tar sands could be shipped by rail, which would pose its own set of risks, such as explosions. Republicans overwhelmingly supported the project in both houses of Congress. The fight in the Senate split Democrats, with most voting to oppose the project on environmental and health grounds, though a handful opted to support it, largely to bolster hopes of Louisiana Democratic Senator Mary Landrieu winning her December 6th runoff election, since jobs would flow primarily to her district. California's Democratic Senator Dianne Feinstein, who donated money to help Landrieu, nonetheless cast her vote against the XL pipeline, arguably the deciding vote for now.
This is Leon Thompson with a report on the president's plan to use executive action to ease immigration restrictions. President Obama could unveil as soon as Friday his planned unilateral overhaul of the nation's immigration system. Details of the proposed measures remain under wraps, but senior administration officials have said Obama is prepared to go big. Homeland Security Secretary Jay Johnson said over the weekend that the administration is in the final stages of developing the plan, which he describes as comprehensive, touching all aspects of American immigration, including border security. The most controversial aspect of Obama's planned action will be an order to, on a temporary basis, exempt from deportation and grant work permits to as many as 5 million undocumented immigrants. A letter to President Obama from Democrat Senate leaders on Monday suggests the president take executive action since the House has failed to pass comprehensive immigration reforms. Immigration communities have waited too long for House Republicans to catch up with the American public's support for comprehensive immigration reform, the letter stated. We strongly support your plan to improve as much of the immigration system as you can within your legal authority. The administration has said it plans to issue an executive order by the end of the year. It would give nearly 5 million immigrants worker visas. The senators also wrote in their letter that deportation relief would help the economy, American workers, and employers by increasing payroll tax revenues by billions of dollars. It will bring undocumented workers out of the underground economy, which undercuts wages and labor protections for Americans and gives unscrupulous employers an unfair competitive advantage. Obama has said he is prepared to expand a 2012 program, Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, that has so far shielded more than 500,000 young immigrants from deportation. Under terms of the program implemented by executive action, only migrants who came to the U.S. before age 16, are under age 31, have lived here 5 years, completed schooling, and have no criminal record are eligible for relief in 2-year renewable increments. On Sunday, President Obama said, "We've got severe resource constraints right now at the border, not in apprehending people, but in processing and having enough immigration judges and so forth. And so what's within our authority to do is reallocating resources and reprioritizing since we can't do everything." president is reported to be considering modifications to the existing criteria, which could expand the number of immigrant youth eligible to apply. Immigration advocates say Obama may also create a new deferred action program that could benefit millions of undocumented immigrant adults who are parents of American citizens or legal residents. Aside from deferred action, the White House is weighing whether to further refine guidance for which immigrants should be prosecuted and deported if they are apprehended by authorities. None of the proposed Obama executive actions would create a pathway to citizenship for undocumented immigrants. The White House says all executive actions can be overturned, both through action by Congress or by the next president, making any expansion of relief for undocumented immigrants through deferred action programs temporary and tenuous. That's why it continues to be my great preference to see Congress pass comprehensive legislation, because that is not reversed by a future president. It would have to be reversed by a future Congress, Obama said Sunday. But that appears unlikely. The Republicans now in control of both houses of Congress. Republican Speaker John Boehner recently stated, "I've made clear to the president that if he acts unilaterally on his own, outside his authority, he will poison the well and there will be no chance for immigration reform moving in this Congress." However, the speaker did not promise that immigration reform would be passed even if the president does not take unilateral action. Boehner blamed recent congressional inaction on a wave of immigrant children crossing the border. In the past, Republicans have said they wanted stronger border security before considering immigration reforms. Some Republicans have threatened to hold up the omnibus spending bill that funds the government, potentially bringing about another government shutdown to block immigration reform. This has been East County Magazine on KNSJ 89.1 Descanso.
Last week, President Barack Obama announced that he is sending an additional 1,500 U.S. troops to Iraq to train and advise Iraqi and Kurdish forces in the region, doubling the current number of troops deployed there. The president will also ask Congress for an additional $5.6 billion to help fight the terrorist group ISIL, also known as ISIS or the Islamic State. Locally, reactions to the news are mixed. Mark Arabo, head of the Neighborhood Market Association and a national spokesman for Iraqi Chaldean Christians in America, says, quote, "The addition of 1,500 ground troops to combat ISIL shows that the battle against Islamic extremism is one that will require time, energy, and resources," unquote. Arabo initially opposed boots on the ground, but as the genocide and torture of Christians and other minorities at the hands of ISIL has accelerated in the region, his position has changed. In an email sent to media, Arabo now states, quote, "The Chaldean Christian community of San Diego welcomes the American presence in Iraq because the survival of Christianity within the region is greatly dependent upon a U.S. ground presence. It has become alarmingly clear that ISIL will not be eliminated with airstrikes alone. Their deterioration will come only after America and like-minded nations unify against this ruthless brand of evil promoted by ISIL," unquote. However, on the other side of the debate, Gilbert Fields, director for communications at San Diego Veterans for Peace, says he believes sending additional troops to the Middle East is a terrible idea. Fields spoke to East County Magazine as an individual, but said he believes his thoughts represent views of the majority of Veterans for Peace members locally. He opposed U.S. intervention in Iraq in 2003 and now says, quote, "We should have learned by now, based on Vietnam and other tragedies, that the use of a huge Army or Marine Corps ground force when one is dealing with a relatively small group of terrorists is often counterproductive to the overall mission," unquote. Veterans for Peace would value humanitarian aid to assist those who have been displaced, he said, but noted that this is normally provided by locals or international civilian agencies, not an outside Western military force. Despite atrocities committed by ISIL and requests for U.S. intervention to protect persecuted minorities, Fields is emphatic in his opinion that, quote, "We should have long ago removed all of our troops from the area and certainly not be planning to send any more back into the overall mess that has been created by us and others by the overall breakdown in law and order that Saddam Hussein and other despots so ruthlessly kept under control," unquote. He contends that to fight a terrorist group like ISIS would require siding with other groups in the Middle East that may be extremist or untrustworthy. He concludes by saying, quote, "I see no good guys in the current fighting that are worthy of our support. By our actions in 2001 and 2003, we have reopened a 1,400-year-old religious war between various moderate and extreme factions of Islam, and have also helped create a situation where the most radical groups can thrive. We should be ashamed of what we have created, but we should stop making matters worse by picking sides among the least worst groups that we still do not understand, unquote. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barrena.
The U.S. 9th District Court of Appeals, in a divided 2-1 decision, ruled that California's Attorney General and gun control groups cannot appeal a decision that granted broader concealed gun carry rights in a San Diego case. Gun owner Edward Peruta had challenged Sheriff Bill Gore's restrictions on carrying concealed loaded guns in public places. In February, a court ruled that the sheriff must issue a permit for a concealed weapon to Peruta, who said he wanted to carry a gun for self-defense even though he did not prove any specific threat had been made. A permit can still be denied if somebody has a criminal record or serious mental health issues. San Diego Sheriff Bill Gore opted not to appeal the lower court ruling that broadened gun owners' rights and has begun issuing permits pursuant to that court's decision. The case has been cited as precedent, prompting many other California counties and law enforcement departments to do the same. California Attorney General Kamala Harris and the Brady Center to Prevent Gun Violence appealed the verdict after Sheriff Gore declined to do so. But two of the three appellate court justices found that Harris and the gun control advocates had waited too late to do so. Now, it's still possible that the full court could decide to hear this case. Meanwhile, Jonathan Lowy, director of the Legal Action Project at the Brady Center for Prevention of Gun Violence, says the court's decision barring Brady chapters from defending what he calls San Diego's sensible concealed firearm arms policy is contrary to prior Ninth Circuit and Supreme Court precedent. The group is weighing its legal options. He adds the shooting deaths of unarmed teenagers Jordan Davis and Trayvon Martin by licensed concealed carry holders highlights the dangers created when law enforcement is not allowed to prevent dangerous people from carrying guns in public. Make no mistake, he says, we think San Diego and any other city has the right to reasonably restrict the carrying of loaded, hidden handguns in public, and we are confident that position will ultimately prevail. But gun advocacy groups contend that citizens should have a right to carry guns for their own self-protection. Joyce Malcolm, a law professor at George Mason University Law School, concludes, a right to bear arms is no right at all if you need to demonstrate a need to carry that firearm which satisfies the police. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
A San Diego Gas and Electric Company employee who struck a homeless man with an SDG&E pickup truck in early January and then fled the scene has been sentenced to 180 days of house arrest and 20 days of public service, but no jail time. Judge Laura Hallgren also gave Hector Hoyt 3 years probation after he pled guilty to felony hit and run. Hoyt hit Robert Fisher, age 54, on Hamishaw Boulevard in El Cajon, but did not stop or even call 911. Instead, he left Fisher lying in the street at night. Fisher was subsequently hit by a second vehicle and died at the scene. The second motorist stopped and called police. Hoyt, by contrast, attempted to hide his vehicle in the backyard and wash evidence of the accident off of it, Hoyt's neighbors told 10 News. Why didn't Hoyt stop and call for help to assist the man that he hit? He has not made a public statement. However, he had previously been convicted of drunk driving back in 2005. An attorney representing Hoyt's family has suggested that Hoyt had been drinking at the Outback Steakhouse before the fatal crash and indicated earlier this year that the family may file a lawsuit against SDG&E. SDG&E has said that Hoyt was off duty at the time the accident occurred and he no longer works for the company. The company has not commented on why it would hire a driver with a prior DUI conviction. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
By a unanimous vote, San Diego City Council voted Tuesday to approve $3.5 billion to recycle water for drinking. The Pure Water Project will include upgrading an aging water treatment plant in Point Loma to provide a dependable source of drinking water for the city despite drought conditions. Mayor Kevin Falconer called the project an investment in our future that will provide San Diego the reliable water supply we need for our economy to grow and our city to thrive. The plan was also supported by environmental organizations. Supporters say the plan will ultimately enable recycled, purified former sewage water to make up 30% of San Diego's drinking water supply by 2035. A multi-step process should result in water that is cleaner than current drinking water supplies. A CBS 60 Minutes TV special last Sunday drove home the importance of water recycling, noting that groundwater worldwide, including here in California, is being depleted faster than it can be replenished during the drought. To demonstrate the safety of recycled water, 60 Minutes correspondent Leslie Stahl drank a glass on the air. Consumers may see rate increases to cover a portion of the water recycling cost in San Diego, though much of the project will be covered by state and federal grant funding. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barrena.
This is Miriam Raftery with news about a freak accident in El Cajon. Three women waiting in a food line outside the Seventh-day Adventist Church were struck by a car and injured Tuesday night. According to Lieutenant Greg Robertson, the driver lost control while she was backing out of a parking space, hit an unoccupied SUV, and then struck the three people in the food line outside the church on Madison Avenue. Two of the victims, women ages 74 and 33, were pinned between the vehicle and a cement block wall. They suffered serious injuries and were taken to a hospital. In addition, a 60-year-old woman sustained minor injuries and was treated at the scene. The driver, who was 42, and her 62-year-old passenger also sustained minor injuries and were transported to a hospital. Alcohol does not appear to be a factor in the crash, according to the police. If you have information about the collision, please contact the El Cajon Police Department's Traffic Division at 619-441-1632.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording in our studio at the East County Wellness Center here in El Cajon. Today, my very special guest is Pastor Harold Brown with the East County Transitional Living Center. He was just named Person of the Year in El Cajon by the Chaldean American Association for all of his good works, helping the homeless and other people in need at the East County Transitional Living Center. Pastor Brown, welcome to the show.
Well, we thank you for the opportunity to be here today, to be on the show, and to tell you a little bit about the East County Transitional Living Center. We currently have 300 to 400 people in a one-year program. We operate five separate programs on site at the East County Transitional Living Center, and we're probably one of the best-kept secrets in East County. However, we're thankful that you're giving us an opportunity to change that.
Well, very good. We want everyone to hear all about the services that are available out there to help folks. But first, I'm wondering if you could take us back and tell us how you got involved. I understand that you yourself used to be homeless and turned your life around. Tell us about that, what it was like.
Yes, I was addicted to crack cocaine, alcohol, through the 70s. Actually did 4 years in the Army, came out of the Army. Did 3 years in Germany.
Wow, so you're a veteran?
I am a veteran. I was honorably discharged as a veteran of the Army, but I also came out as an alcoholic.
Yeah. Well, there's an awful lot of homeless veterans out there, as you
yeah.
know.
And so I'm aware of why that happens. However, through the 80s, I did very poorly in life. I was imprisoned 3 times.
Wow.
I have over 100 felonies of burglary of dwellings.
Oh, my goodness.
Trying to chase a crack cocaine habit.
So you were the poster boy for turning your life around. What did it? What finally convinced you to get off the drugs and not be homeless anymore?
Well, I came out to California because the judge told me if he ever saw me again, I would get a 25-year-to-life sentence as a career criminal in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And so I left Florida and I came out to California. And in California, I was introduced to Father Joe's village. Father Joe helped me. I got a job down at NASCO, was working, but was still addicted to alcohol and drugs. And alcohol and drugs are out here just as much as they are in Florida. One evening, after a long binge of drinking, I wound up passed out on the streets. Two homeless individuals carried me to the San Diego Rescue Mission, where I heard the message of Jesus Christ for the first time. And I gave my life to him, got saved, worked at the rescue mission for over 10 years, started as the maintenance man and mm-hmm. became the director of facilities.
Good for you.
Leaving the rescue mission in 2001, I came out to the East County, and because there was such a need out here in the East County.
Yeah, we have no homeless shelter, really, of any size.
Yeah. And Father John Conrad was kind of protesting a little bit on Farragut Circle back in 2002. He had allowed individuals to sleep alongside of his church. And we saw what he was doing and said we needed to help him figure out a better way to do it. Father Joe, again, was gracious in setting up his tent out at Gillespie Field, funded by several business people here in the East County. And El Cajon had his first one and only cold weather shelter. That was very successful. We had everybody off the street. Many people got placed into long-term shelters through that. And the idea of having a homeless shelter or at least a center where people could get a hand up and get back into life was born. And the Fabulous Seven Motel seemed to be the perfect place to do it.
Out here in El Cajon.
Out here in El Cajon. We initially were going to have Alpha Project run the facility.
Mm-hmm.
But some folks in the community decided that they didn't want such a thing happening, and they sued the city for a lack of due diligence on a conditional use permit. And so because the property was then in litigation, Alpha Project wasn't able to run the Prop 36 drug diversion program they wanted to run. And that gave me the opportunity to become the center's manager. And we began the process of turning that old motel into a transitional living center.
Very good. And fast forwarding to today, mm-hmm. you have a lot more available than that. Now, I understand you are a faith-based organization, but you also offer a lot of services that are non-denominational. Some of them have government funding from the city, perhaps other sources. Tell us about what a person in need, what kind of help they can get at the transitional living center.
Yes, early on we recognized that not everyone's going to respond to the gospel, but everyone needs help. And so we started several programs, one through the city of El Cajon called the Emergency Shelter Program. It's funded by CDBG funds, mm-hmm. HUD funds, and its target audience is single women with children during the inclement weather time from right now through around March. A single woman who's living in her car has several children. There's many of them out there. They can come to us for 28 days. We pay all the fees. We provide all the services, case management, counseling, drug counseling, any kind of services they need. Plus, we're hooked up with all the social service agencies and all the social service help that's throughout the county.
So what is your capacity? How many people can you take in at any one time from a shelter standpoint?
Well, we have around 300 beds. And in the five programs that are operational. There's emergency shelter, we have transitional living, I have a family restoration program, a single men's and a single women's program, all operating at the same time at the center. We have two separate locations for single men, single women, in what we call first phase of our one-year program, where we take them away from downtown, away from all of the temptations of life, and put them in a rural setting for 90 days. And then bring them back down to the center.
A rural setting. So are those areas further east out of
East Canada? Yes. My women's center is out in Flint Springs, and my men's center is up in Dulzura.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Now, I understand that you're looking to expand the shelter, the transitional living aspect for women, I understand?
Is it? Yes. We hope to be able to build, and we have permission from the city. We've met with the city and with businessmen that are willing to help us to build two- and three-bedroom apartments along the freeway mm-hmm. Going along the side, which would open up 50 to 60 single rooms, motel rooms, that we could then offer to two different really specific groups of individuals. One of them is the 18 to 21-year-old foster kids that are exiting out of the foster system. The statistics on these kids is horrible. Mm-hmm. Over 60% of them wind up in prison, in jail, committing some type of crime once they come out.
What is the answer to keep those kids out of jail? What can be done for them, and what should be done, in your opinion?
Well, what needs to be done is just recognizing that they don't have to go that way. That if somebody really pays attention to them and shows them a little bit of love and a little bit of care, they're really upset with the system. They're upset with life. They're upset with the fact that they never had any parents. They were never adopted. They were told they were going to be adopted.
Probably
so they
bounced
have
a lot of places.
A lot of hope deferred, and hope deferred makes the heart sick.
Yeah.
And then they become rebellious. And so just to sit down with them, go through a little bit of counseling with them, tell them, hey, look, we're going to help you, and then actually help them.
Do you provide a GED if somebody didn't graduate high school, or they want to go to college, or they want to go to trade school? How much help can they get there?
Yeah, we have a full wraparound services continuum of care, it's called, through social service industry. We have GED classes. We have GED prep classes. Foothills Adult Center has graciously sent one of their teachers over to be with us Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday from 8 o'clock to 2 o'clock every week to provide GED prep training for any individual who comes to our center who needs that.
Wonderful.
And then the East County Posse, another 501c3 in the East County, is willing to pay for all the tests.
Excellent.
We've had over 40 people graduate in 2 years to get their GED, and all 40 of them went on to get jobs.
Very good.
So it's 100% success ratio.
Can't beat that.
It's one of the best programs I've ever had.
Now, you mentioned there's two specific groups you're looking to help next. One of them is these young people coming out of foster care. What's the other one?
The other is there's a huge population of teenagers that have had children. And they have children, and they're, unfortunately, a lot of them are kicked out of the home because they were either pregnant or they had a child.
Wow.
Or they ran away, got pregnant, had a child, and don't know what to do. And county social service has them in houses, and they're dealing with them. They've come over to our program, and they like what they've seen with us. And we've worked with county social services as far as the foster kids. And the idea of being able to have those girls in a motel room with supervision, with care, with all of our services is...
What are some of the services that they can get there other than just mere shelter?
Full case management. A case plan is drawn up on each person that comes. Case management means literally we walk through life with them and set a plan. We set short-term goals, long-term goals, and then we follow up with them. We obviously have the GED classes. We also have a resource center where they can learn to fill out resumes. We have computers where they can get online and they can put their resumes out. We also have job coaches that come twice a week and do mock interviews.
How about child care?
Child care is interesting. I don't have child care, but I do have what's called a family co-op. And so families that are in our programs sign a cooperative with the other families, and they watch each other's children.
That works out.
And I have a facility down, which used to be Aunt Emma's Pancake Breakfast, in the back of the facility there, that we've set up as a child care place. But the parents watch their own children and watch the other parents' children.
Okay.
And so child care is really difficult when it comes to insurances and all the rest of it. And so we kind of find this little niche to where if we get them to cooperate with one another, they literally set all the schedules up and everything else, and they watch each other's children while the others are either going to work or going to classes or going to job training. Whatever's happening, they can watch each other's children.
Very good. Now, while you may be best known for providing services to the homeless and helping people get off of the streets with transitional living and so forth, you also have some help for people who aren't on the streets but might be at risk of becoming homeless, those that are really on the edge. Tell us a little bit about what somebody out there is having trouble making ends meet right now can get from the Transitional Living Center.
There's a whole population of kids that are 20-somethings. They're living at home. Some of them are going to school. Some of them aren't. And we really want parents to understand you need to watch your kids. And if you see your kids getting into situations to where they're drinking too much, they're not coming home on time, they're messing up, and you know they're messing up, bring them down to us. We'll do an intake interview with them. We'll walk through some options with them of what they can do. They may be able to come into one of our programs and go through the program, or we might be able to give them other types of services such as just counseling.
Yeah.
I have a whole set of counselors that are trying to get their marriage family therapy master's degrees. One of my board members, Dr. Charlie Long, supervises these counselors as they're going through their school. They have to have a certain amount of actual counseling hours. I can set counseling up for them free of
Very
charge.
Nice.
And we can maybe rescue some of these kids that are just going the wrong direction before they wind up in prison.
Yeah, very, very important work. Now, you also have limited amounts of food available, I understand, for families that may be food challenged at the end of the month, for instance.
Well, food is an interesting thing. We get a lot of donated food. We are part of the food bank. We're part of Second Chance food recovery programs. Mm-hmm. Food, we get donated quite a bit. Individuals get on food stamps, and they can get food stamps and get food. My food budget's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Food I do pretty well with, actually.
Yeah. But if people need, say, a once-a-month box of food?
Now, there's community. There's people out in the community around us who are challenged with trying to pay bills and trying to make ends meet. They can come to us mm-hmm. on Fridays, Friday after Friday mornings. We do food boxes.
Mm-hmm.
And we can offer you a food box, which is just the basic staples that we get from donated foods.
Mm-hmm.
And we can help you out.
And how many days' supply of food is in that box?
They'll probably have a 3 to 5 day supply of food.
Nice. And they can qualify for that once a month?
Once a month.
Yeah.
Yeah. You have to come and meet with our food service director
mm-hmm.
and show them that you are living somewhere. We aren't, because of our conditional use permit, I'm not allowed to do homeless services to people who are homeless.
Interesting.
It's very interesting. I'm a homeless shelter, but
they have to check in.
You have to be willing to check in.
Interesting.
You have to come in off the streets and get help. Now, if you're living, in a house and you're just short on income and you can come in and sort of share that with us,
mm-hmm.
we'll help you once a month.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, you just received the award from the Chaldean American Association as their Person of the Year. Tell me a little bit about the work that you're doing with the Iraqi Chaldean community here in East County.
Yeah. I'm very fortunate to, in January of this year, to be invited to be a part of the East County Leadership Forum.
Mm-hmm.
And in our forum, one of the things that we recognized was we, on a whole, there were businessmen, men from faith, and men from government. We really recognize that there's a situation that's happened in El Cajon with the Chaldean community and the Christian community and businesses and the government. And basically, most of us were ignorant of each other, literally ignorant of each other. We drive down the roads. I've lived here in El Cajon for 8-9 years now, and we drive down the roads, and all of a sudden there's all these Arabic signs up and businesses up and men walking around, and we don't know who they are, and they don't know who we are.
Yeah.
And one of the things that we decided we needed to do was to bridge that gap and start having the Chaldean community meet with the Christian community, meet with business, mm-hmm. meet with government,
mm-hmm.
so that we all start to understand we all have the same basic desires.
Right.
To have a safe place, a safe community to live, a safe place to raise our children, and a safe place to raise our families.
And it should be noted that the Chaldeans themselves are Christians. They would tell you they're the descendants of the most ancient Christians of Babylonia and Mesopotamia.
They're very proud of that.
Mm-hmm.
And they're very law-abiding citizens. They're faith-based. They believe in basically the same thing all the Christian churches believe in. But there was this aspect of who are they? And literally, even guys on our forum didn't know. And through some education and understanding, we've had private meetings, we've eaten at each other's homes,
mm-hmm.
We've really started to get to know each other, and the amazing thing is we all want the same thing. We want a better El Cajon.
Yeah, the whole theme of their banquet, I was at that, their awards banquet, where you were honored, was unity and bringing the community together here for common goals.
Yes. Now, what has happened in Iraq over the last year with ISIS, ISIL, however you want to...
Tragic. The terrorists that are driving so many of the minorities, Christians and others, from their homes, beheading them, telling them if you won't convert to Islam, then they behead them, torture them. And then they steal everything they have.
And they take everything from them and run them out. What has happened there is a tragedy. And certainly we're going to be receiving some of these refugees into El Cajon because When a refugee comes, it's like any other immigration status. They have to have a family that will support them, that will mm-hmm. sign for them saying we're going to be their sponsor and they're going to come. The difference is that I have found is the Chaldean that came during the 80s, 90s, and 2000s came. They were fairly successful business people. They came to America to find the American dream and to become American citizens. And they have.
Yeah, and they were not impoverished when they came.
And they've done very well. They've set businesses up. They've learned how to work in the system. Yeah. And they now can support others that are coming. The difficulty and the challenge is going to be we're going to have folks coming who really didn't want to come to America. They were fine where they were.
And they're coming with nothing.
They're coming out of refugee camps. Yeah. So whatever we can do as far as the East County Transitional Living Center to help in that, we're going to partner with the Chaldean Church, with St. Peter's and several of the other dioceses and see what we can do, what programs we might be able to set up to help that whole process. We don't know how long these folks will be with us. They may be able to go back to their homeland.
Someday.
And certainly that's what they're going to want to do. That might not happen though. They may have to become Americans, which is great. We're a melting pot and that's what America is built on.
Always has been.
Always has been.
Most all of us, unless we're Native American, most all of us have ancestors that came from somewhere else.
Right.
Looking at the homeless problem broadly across our region, I'm wondering if you believe enough is being done to help the homeless, especially here in East County, and if you could wave a magic wand, what else could or should be done to prevent homelessness and help those who are on the streets already get off the streets?
Yeah, there's many faces of homelessness, and it's a multifaceted problem. I've found a little niche of programs that I can help people who need a hand up to get back into life.
Mm-hmm.
But there's many homeless that are really seriously challenged mentally. Some people, through the use of drugs, methamphetamines, literally burn holes in your brain.
Wow.
They're a horrible drug. And when someone has gone through that much drug abuse, many of them need to get on other drugs to help them just to be stable. I don't have those kind of services,
but there are services
out there, and there are many organizations that help people like that. There's a lot of help out there. The problem all of us have as organizations that help homeless people is funding. We need funding. And many people want to do it on their own without coming to the organizations like ours, like Father Joe's, like the Rescue Mission, like Alpha Project. Mm-hmm. There's so many great organizations out there that can provide the type of services that these homeless people need. However, a lot of people are going out still in the parks and feeding people. And to me, that's the worst thing you can do for someone who's homeless. You're just enabling them to remain on the streets. We don't want them on the streets. They need to get into shelters and they need to get in a place where someone can help them. And there's plenty of help.
Yeah, and it's not just housing at your shelter. Again, if they come in, they can get job training, getting their education,
case management, education.
Healthcare? What about healthcare? If they come in, they have health problems, they're diabetic or whatever. What do you do to help them get healthcare?
Everyone that comes into our programs, and I'm sure this is countywide with all the programs, we sign them up on the Affordable Health Care Act.
So Obamacare, you get them Obamacare.
Of course. They qualify. They can get all those services. The thing is, we want people to understand there is help if you just reach out to get it. You can get the help. Society has the help. I know there's a big thrust on trying to help the veteran homeless men and women, and that's very needed. And they're going to get help. The problem is a lot of folks don't do any research, and they feel like they need to help somebody, and they go out and give somebody something, and really all you're doing is you're enabling that person to stay in the situation you're at. You feel great when you leave, but you leave the person on the street. What I would suggest people do, and this is just my own personal opinion, I've been in this for almost 30 years now, and having been homeless and know what it's like to sit there and hold a sign and put my hand out and take money from somebody and say, oh, that I got that sucker, and go and get a beer or go and get some drugs, you know, and they know how to put on the best face and they know how to look as pitiful as they can look.
Yeah,
and then there's some that just literally this is what they do for a living.
Yeah, and they're not all that way, but the problem, of course, is it's very difficult to tell who is
but
and who
isn't. Your research. Find an organization that you believe in, whether it's of your faith or your beliefs, and support that organization. We all need a steady flow of income coming in so we can do the programs that we know how to do. We've been trained to do them. We know how to do them. Mostly it's funding.
I'd like to hear a little bit more about these camps out in the rural areas that you run to help the men and the women. What happens out there?
Our discipleship training program is based on four phases.
And this part is a faith-based.
This is faith-based. Now, you don't have to be Christian to come. Mm-hmm. You just have to be open to listen to the teaching. We have many people that will go through our one-year program, and I don't know that they become Christian. I know they weren't baptized. They go to all the services and everything, but they leave. And they go back out to work and get jobs, and they become productive members of society. But our programs are based on four 90-day phases. The first 90 days, for single men, single women, we send them into a rural setting. I have a house for women up in Flint Springs, and I have a 12-acre property up in Del Zura for 80 men. So I can have almost 100 people at one time on first phase of a four-phase program. Mm-hmm. They come down after first phase. They're away from all the temptations.
Yeah, what do they learn when they're out there?
Well, women are interesting. Women need to talk. Women need to be counseled and feel loved and feel cared for and feel safe. We have a lot of counseling sessions, a lot of groups that come and meet with the girls, and folks come and love on them. And they need to feel loved. They also do a few activities. We have car washes and stuff that they participate in. Men need to work. We work stuff out. We do things. So out at first phase, after the first several weeks, we start training them in brush management, wood chipping, wood cutting, wood stacking. I have contracts with the state of California. I have contracts Fire Safe Councils.
Helping clear fire breaks. Helping useful work.
Yes, we actually go out and we do the 100 foot clearance safe around people's properties that have been cited by the fire department and don't have the funds to actually take care of it.
Nice.
And
we've covered that. We've actually just covered some cases out here in El Cajon where
SDG&E,
houses went into liens because they could not afford to get their weeds pulled.
That's right. SDG&E has a grant program. We're able to get funds from that grant program. We send our guys out. They do a great job. The guys go out, they sweat out, they do the work, they get the work done, they have a sense of accomplishment, and the people are very happy that they do it. They're safe. We just did, last week, we did lion, tigers, and bears.
Their big cat rescue facility out there. Very nice.
We went out and we cleared all the brush out around. We've removed some oak trees that had that oak mite. What we do is we cut the wood, we split it, we stack it, and we sell it. So if you're in need of firewood this year, you can call me, and I will bring a cord of oak, seasoned oak, out to you and stack it alongside your house for $300.
Wow, very good.
Yeah.
Now, after the first 90-day phase is finished out there in the rural areas, then what happens?
They transition down to the main center here in El Cajon. There's biblical studies that they go through. We actually do street witnessing. You'll see our folks walking up and down the streets of El Cajon carrying a banner. We do this to get them to proclaim their faith or just to be out there and talk to other homeless people that are out there. They also do jobs around the center. They work in maintenance. They work in laundry. They work in the kitchens. There's many things that have to do. Plus, they do a curriculum. We also find out whether or not they have a high school diploma, whether they can read, whether they can write, where they are along this whole thing, and then case manage each aspect. So second phase is around the center. They also are initially trained on what we call TIPS training, which is alcohol training for the concession stands that we operate down at Petco Park and at Qualcomm.
Interesting.
We have contracts with these organizations to send folks down, and we actually run the concession stands.
Really? So even though these people have gone through rehab, you have them running a place that's offering alcohol at the stadium.
Third phase. Third phase is
really
work therapy.
Really resisting temptation, huh?
It is an interesting thing. When we first did it, we were like, gosh, I don't know about that. You know, we're going to have guys that struggle with alcohol handing a beer to someone. But I'll tell you, over the 7 or 8 years we've done it, a handful have relapsed. Just a handful.
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody's watching each other. and they've been trained to do what they do, and they're just working. They're learning to go back to work. So in third phase is work therapy. You learn to dress. You learn to report to a supervisor. Sometimes you become a supervisor. You work the stands, and those hours that you work actually work for your resume, because we are actually working for Delaware North Corporation, which is the corporation that does all the food services down at the stadiums.
So that helps them go out and go forth and get a job somewhere else down the road.
Also, we do clean and safe downtown El Cajon. I have 8 to 10 guys that go up and down the streets every day in El Cajon, and they're the guys with the vests on that you'll see walking around. We clean the sidewalks. We talk to the homeless people. We educate the business people on how not to deal with homeless and how to deal with the homeless. We take down their encampments if we find it, and we offer them a place to come if they desire to come. It's been a very successful program. We are actually going to be putting the Christmas tree lights up this year. We're excited about that. We put all the barriers up and set the roadblocks up for when we have the parades, and we set the stage up for Friday night concerts, and we do all that stuff down in the PBID district.
Yeah, good for you, which is the Planned Business Improvement District in downtown El Cajon now.
Yep. So we've developed ways to where about 80% of our financing comes through our own work.
Tell us about some of the success stories of people who have transition through your program. Where are they now?
We've had hundreds of people that are out working, back working in life. I've actually had quite a few men who have become pastors of churches. We just had two ordained in the last 2 weeks, one up in Oceanside at a church as a youth pastor, and one at a church down in the South Bay as a pastor of a church. So hundreds and hundreds of men and women and families have become successful. They started businesses. We have them working out in businesses. I have videos and all that of success stories. But people always ask me that question. What's your success rate? Our success rate is 100%. 100% of the people that come and try to get help will get help.
Interesting.
And 100% of the people that don't want help won't get help. You know, so what is our success rate? I've had people come through our program and only spend 4 or 5 weeks, and that was enough. They got off the drugs, they got off the alcohol, they went back to work, they went to churches, they went somewhere, and I'll see them somewhere walking down the street or at the mall or at the grocery store. Hey, Pastor, how you doing? And I say, oh, wonderful. I don't have idea who they are.
Would you say that most of them who've gone through the program wind up off of the streets, or do more of them relapse and wind back out there?
I would say most of them make it.
That's good to know.
Most of them make it. Do they relapse? Absolutely. Almost everyone does. I did. Mm-hmm. I relapsed once or twice.
Sure, stress.
I fell back into it. Something happened, and I went back to that comfort zone. But then I woke up because I had been trained. Mm-hmm. I had come to an understanding of that's not the right way to live. That I'm going to die if I keep doing that. And they stop. Some of them come back, and we refocus them is what we call it. Some of them don't need to. They just come back to church and say, hey, you know, I've slipped off, and I need to get back into it. That's wonderful. Come to church. Come to the studies. All of our studies, all of our services are open to anyone who wants to come.
Yeah, again, you can be Jewish or atheist or Muslim
Doesn't matter.
Buddhist or whatever.
Doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Transitional living is open to everyone. It's more of a secular-based program. Emergency shelter is open to everyone who needs it. The focus is women with children. But if you have a man with children, the key is with children.
Okay, so if you don't have children, you can't go into that.
Well, if you don't have children, we would put you into the single men's and single women's program. And again, it's a 1-year commitment, but you don't have to stay for a year. We're not a prison. We don't hold people.
You're free to leave.
You're free to come, free to go. You know, if you go, you go.
Do you need volunteers down there?
We do. Volunteers are always welcomed. We would love to have folks that would like to come in maybe and work with the children, do some tutoring, things like that. We always need rooms remodeled, rooms painted. Guys in the trades that really know what they're doing.
Do you need stuff besides, obviously, donations and cash?
We need everything.
Okay.
Think about what would you do if you had a house 400 people? You need everything.
Donations of things like toiletries or clothes.
Especially women's hygiene items, very important. Brand new women's undergarments, brand new, please, not old.
Yeah.
Brand brand new underwear for men, brand new socks. At this time of year, coats, jackets, blankets. We need all of it. And it's a constant because we have people that are transitioning. And when they transition, we give them what they get. We don't take it back from them. We try to suit them up so that they are successful. We literally, you know, our motto is providing a hand up. And that's what we do. And we try to track them the best we can. And our services are open, to all those who go back out. We work as hard as we can to get them into housing, mm-hmm. so that they can be successful, so they can get jobs. We let them know that you're going to take a job for $9 an hour. That's what you're going to take. I know you used to work for $25, $30 an hour, whatever. You're going to take that $9 an hour job, and you're going to get another job, and then another job, and you're going to wind up being successful. But the key is, and one of the things we teach is to be humble. Is to humble yourself and have need. Because if you don't have a need, then I can't help you. If your hands are fist tight, I don't want any help, I can't help you.
Yeah.
I have hundreds of people call me all week long saying, my son is this, my daughter is that, my uncle is this, my mom is this. I can't help them if they don't want help.
Yeah. Well, you certainly have helped an awful lot of people, and it's very easy to see why you were given that Man of the Year, Person of the Year award, Pastor Brown. Is there anything else that you would like our listeners to know about your programs at the Transitional Living Center?
Well, you can go on ectlc.org. That's, again, ectlc.org, and click the donate button. 80% of my money I self-generate. We do very well. We're kind of the flip, the opposite of most programs like ours. Most programs are 80% beholden to donated funds. I'm not. We've developed work programs to where we generate funding, but there is that gap that we have.
Sure.
And if we could get maybe 1,000 to 2,000 people, think about it, that are giving $10, $15 a month, I can help a whole nother group of people.
Yeah.
Again, if you give that money to somebody, don't give them cash. If you feel like you have to give a homeless person something, go buy them some food. Buy them a jacket. Look at their shoes and see if they need new shoes. Go buy them something like that. But don't give them cash. It just won't help them. Find an organization like ours and donate to them. This is a time of year when most organizations make the big push for money. You know, send our money in to feed homeless people. I have a lot of turkeys. I don't need turkeys. I got a ton of turkeys. we're going to feed a lot of folks during Thanksgiving. That's not really what we need. We need support. We need your prayers. We need your volunteerism. Need your things during the year. It's difficult for us to tell people, when you donate things, don't donate something that you would throw in the trash, please, because that's
sure.
what we have to do with it.
Yeah.
You know, Jesus told us to give our best. God tells us to give your first fruits. And so if you're going to donate something, go to the store and buy a brand new pair of shoes and bring it down and donate it.
And again, listeners, if you want to get more information or you want to help out the East County Transitional Living Center, you can go to...
That's ectlc.org. East County Transitional Living Center. Just the initials, ectlc.org. You can call us at 619-442-0457. Or if you'd like to come down for a tour at 1527 East Main Street, just give us a call. I'd love to give you a tour and show you exactly what's going on.
There you go. Just right down the street from our own studio here in the East County Wellness Center. I want to thank you again, Pastor Brown, for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, which is the Network for Social Justice.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Barena, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Giovanni Galicia, and the Smashing Beats. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.